Welcome to Black People Love Paramore podcast, where we chat about the traditionally quote unquote unblack things large groups of black people go up for. Please rate us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, but only if you're going to rate us 5 stars, only because we are 5-star bitches. We're Teal Gotti. I am your co-host, Sequoia.
And I'm Jordan.
And today we are chatting about basketball. But before that, we're going to do In My Defense. I realized last episode that I never explained. I usually don't explain what In My Defense is. So In My Defense is our segment where we bring one of our super niggardly or super cringeworthily white interests and we defend it for y'all. In My Defense this week, I don't have one. I'm not going to lie. I don't have one.
Wow. The tables are turned. You know, usually Sequoia comes in. She's got a well-researched In My Defense. She's been plotting on. She's been stewing on it for like a good couple of days.
Oh, shit.
You're just waiting to tell you guys about it. And now look at her. She's like, you know, prepared.
You know what I could defend, actually? Actually, this one, I just came up with this. Now I'm doing you. I just came up with it on the fly. I could defend, and this is neither incredibly niggardly nor cringeworthy white.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go ahead and defend Miss Doja Cat, okay? Now.
Say more.
Now, I know Miss Doja Cat, I know niggas was mad that Doja Cat was showing feet in the racist chat room, but... But for me,
I love being reminded of that.
You know, for me, I just feel like I don't give a fuck what she does to get her rocks off. You know what I mean? If you want to show feet in the white supremacist chat room and let them call you feet nigger or whatever the fuck, that's not my business. That's not my business. They can't call me it. They can't call me it. But if you like that, babes, for your, I'm not going to yuck your yum. Okay. If that's what gets you off, do you, baby. What my concern is, Babes is extremely talented. The talent speaks for itself. Everything about her is so loudly and brightly talented. And this is the thing where people fuck up. This is where people fuck up. Artists today have more notoriety based on the foolishness that they do, aka showing feet in chat rooms, but they don't have the ability to back it up. You know what I mean? I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. Miss Doja Cat has the ability to back up whatever the fuck foolishness she wants to do. Most of it, you know, she can't do anything now, yeah. But she can do a lot. She, you know what I mean? The ability is there. She's showing feet in racial chat. I don't give a fuck about that. You know, in my defense, Doja Cat is that bitch. Leave her alone. The bars is there. The performance value is there. The visuals is there. Everything is there. And nobody gonna beat my ass behind it. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so Sequoia, you know, your friend, you know, a collaborator, person I've worked with for some time now. And I will follow you in almost any, into battle in almost
but
any scenario.
This is not,
you know
what I mean? Like, you know.
No. All I'm saying is show your feet where you may. But let it not be a racist chat room. You know what I mean?
Now, ideally it wouldn't be. Ideally. But that's not where she at.
You know, like, you know, ideally not like I don't want the members of the chat room to be shopping at Bass Pro Shop. You know what I mean? I don't want them to own any amounts of Realtree camo. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's appropriate for where your feet should be. You know, your feet are your temple, as I often say. And so
the Bible too.
Yeah. So, so I think, I don't know if I can follow you here. I don't know if I can follow you here, but I appreciate you going, I appreciate you being so vulnerable.
Yo, I can't believe that this is where you draw the line. I have sat up here and defended plenty of many of fucking whites after white. Went up here and defended Ariana Grande, all type of shit. And you draw the line. It's because she beige, huh?
I have an open mind. I have an open mind, but my shoes are closed-toed. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, I don't play that.
Open mind, but closed-toed shoes. That's fair. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sending you some images, and I'll explain in a few.
Okay.
I just want you to let you know. Don't be alarmed by the images I'm sending.
Oh my God, I have seen these images. Yes.
Yeah, but I will explain for our beautiful listeners
right.
In just a moment.
All right.
So, you know, in my defense, this is something I've been thinking about. You know, and it's
no.
No,
I'm not about to do this.
You're no. Saying no. You're giving me a no. No. Yeah, wait. Okay, this is misleading. So you think Sequoia thinks where I'm heading in one direction. I promise.
Okay.
I'm heading in another.
Okay.
So basically, I know as you guys are our listeners, you are aware of the existence of Kanye Omari West, you know, the prolific musician, fashion designer, creative director, multi-hyphenate, artist. Mm-hmm. Sequoia, as is documented, is a big fan. And I'm a big fan. Three of the albums I was first listened to as a child on CD player were, a college dropout, late registration, graduation, even 808s and Heartbreak. I remember getting that, getting the physical CD. So this is a man his work has been in my life for a long time. But I haven't always, stuck with Kanye, we're not going to revisit some of his, the highlights, the lowlights of the last few years. But there's a thing that Kanye's been doing recently in his dress, in his style of dress, and Kanye is always on a pioneer, he's always a trendsetter. He's been wearing these big, old, what can only be described as giant, old, biggity big fisherman's waders. Is how I would describe them. And some people, and he wears them often with a tight pant. But these boots are knee high. They're bulky. They look like something a Lego would wear if they were dressing for the snow. Wow. You know what I mean? And so they're very large, and they're very kind of rectangular and bulky. And some people look, they look stupid. People have come for him for the the Yeezy Croc, whatever. But I'm here today on this podcast to defend this look as arguably, the most intrepid, forward-thinking, positively saucy look of 2022. This is the first big silhouette style change, revolution, I think is occurring in front of our eyes with these big, giant, biggity big fisherman waders. I think they're great. And I think they look good with his tiny little jeans. I think it's incredible. His tiny little jean with a little paint on it. I think it's an incredible look. And Kanye's had some great looks over the years. And I think this is up there with them. I think he is seeing he's seeing different colors than we are. You know what I'm saying? He's seeing different shapes than we are. Yeah. And I want to commend that man, Kanye Omari West, for the work that he continues to do in the sauce department.
I can't believe this shit right now. So Jordan, in fact, went directly where I thought he was going. I certainly thought he was going to defend the looks. I definitely thought he was going to defend these motherfucking big plot hopping ass boots on this nigga feet, okay? That's exactly what his ass did. And you know what? I'm going to let you have it because you are the fashion boy here. I am simply not a fashion boy. That's Jordan's perspective, okay? That's Jordan's wheelhouse. He got it. I'm going to let him have it. But to me, these boots is a tragedy. They're a tragedy. They're tragic. They're I don't even know what the fuck is going on with these right now.
All I'm saying is he looks like he's ready for anything. He looks like he can stomp his way into the new millennium with confidence. No. These boots look like they've seen things.
Jordan, he don't look like he's ready for anything. He looked like he's ready to wade in the waters. When he said slavery was a choice, he looked like he's ready to prove that to us. He looked like he's ready to wade in the waters. That's what he looked like. He looked like he's ready to escape, nigga.
These are the slavery was a choice ones?
These are the slavery was a choice ones, dead ass.
Hi, I'm Kate Casey, an unscripted TV expert. Three times a week, I interview the talent, directors, producers, and hosts of television's most popular reality shows, docuseries, and documentaries. I get all the behind-the-scenes stories. I cover everything from The Bachelor, Selling Sunset, and Real Housewives to Tinder Swindler, The Last Dance, and Secrets of Playboy. Join me as I ask all the questions that you want asked. And best of all, I'm the most trusted source on what to watch every week. I will give you a guide on everything from true crime and sports to competition, calling from all streaming and cable networks. The best guests, the best shows and series, Reality Life with Kate Casey.
Oh my God! These outfits. Okay, I'm gonna let you get that off.
We'll look. Maybe we'll attach some links in the show notes or something like that. Because I think you heard it here first. This is the new wave. Kanye doing it. All right.
Now watch my dumb ass. Well, you know what? I already do really like a big chunky boot. I don't like these in particular, mm-hmm. but I am a notorious big clunky, big soled cleat looking bottom ass boot wearing girl, you know? Garrick hates it. I remember my group chat erupted one day because I think Tristan said, you with your ugly ass shoes or something, and I said, huh? And all the boys were like, yeah, I hate them. And all the girls were like, what the fuck? Like, no, they're cute. So clearly there's a divide. You know what I mean? There's a divide.
Yeah, here. No. They're not seeing you. No,
they just can't see what I can see. And obviously it's a Gemini thing, because, you know, Kanye Omari West, Gemini extraordinaire, and then me, myself, Sequoia Holmes, also Gemini extraordinaire. So clearly we just have a little bit more of the forward thinkingness too. And then there's Jordan, Gemini rising, right? Who, you know, mm-hmm. we just have the forward thinkingness, and I can't help that. I don't know what to tell you, nigga. So it is what it is. Shout out to Big Boots. Shout out to Big Boys with Big Boots. We love that.
It's a big boy, big boots, big, biggity, biggity, big.
Biggity, big, little pants, big boots. We love that. That's great. Now, what is this Tyler, the Creator photo you sent me, Jordan?
If you scroll through that little gallery, Kanye's in the boots
with Tyler. Also, fucking shout out Tyler, the Creator. I know that I've talked about Tyler, the Creator on this before, but I can't get enough. Somebody said that Tyler is famous for having good taste. And I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is a good way to put it. I won't argue with that. The man has good taste, and he's gone ahead and monetized that.
He makes music. Yeah, he does. He does monetize his taste. I think he has, like, kind of the people who, like, his legion of stands are like, Tyler Creator listens to jazz. That's so cool. You know what I mean? Like, I think his taste is just left of the taste of his fan base. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, he's the master putter honor.
God,
you know what I'm saying?
He's pulling,
like,
them to the left a little people, bit.
To the left a little bit, in a way. And he's reaching an audience that, like, of a size that typically isn't being exposed to these sort of things. I feel like it's part of his whole, I feel like that's like an ethos of his, though. I feel like he's like, I want niggas to smell good,
yes,
and to know about flowers,
yes,
and scents, you know, and German cars and
passports.
What's that band called? There's that French band that he's likes, but yeah, like he's definitely, that's his, like, his whole wave. And I think he's like a chief influence. He's doing a great job. He's really, like, I feel like a masterful sort of command of a bunch of different, like, of, like, ways to appeal to people. You know, I think that's really impressive and a skill in itself.
You know what? I think that Tyler doesn't like his fans. I'm just going to say it. I don't think that Tyler likes his fans anymore. I think that he used to. I think he got his fan base from his Odd Future days, from, you know, when he was on Bullshit. And he grew up a little bit, and that same fan base has kind of stayed with him. And I don't think he likes his fans. I've seen him a couple times in shows, and I get the sense that he does not really care for the majority of his fan base. Even with this scent that just came out, before he dropped the scent, he was like, I want y'all to know this is not for everybody. Like, he was making it clear that, like, it's not for my typical fans. Like, y'all gonna come in here, it's not for you. You know, I'm trying to expand past.
It's not he doesn't like them. He's definitely a little resentful of the fact that he attracted all these kind of, like, young white incels early on.
Yes.
Because he was acting like a young white incel.
Yeah, absolutely,
you know?
So
what did he expect? But now he's like, I'm 30 and I'm like into, like, luxury goods.
Yeah.
And so you guys need to act right. Yeah. You know, like he's like, I'm not like the, you know, I'm not. So I imagine that's weird to also, like, be a person who, like, who has fans. You know what I'm saying? Like, to be someone who like, a bunch of strangers are associated with you, you know, like, in the stuff that you do. You know,
that must be really odd. That is such a crazy way to put it. I have never thought about it like that. A bunch of strangers are associated with you. That fucking sucks.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Wow. It must be so odd. But Odd Future. Okay, look, this is why we pay us the big bucks.
Full circle, right. Look at that. All right. We did, in my defense, song of the week. I don't have a song of the week. I really did not prepare for this damn podcast at all, y'all. I don't have a song of the week. Jordan, do you have a song that you want to tell the kids about? Any French shit you've been listening to out in France? Jordan in France right now, y'all.
d'accord. bien sûr. Yes, actually, the YouTube algorithm served me up a hot one the other day. Let me tell you.
Okay.
So I was trying to clean up the kitchen, and I needed some, like, smooth, string, you know, ambient vibes,
yeah.
And they served me this song called Let Us Go Into the House of the Lord slash I don't know, it's one of those that's too long for me to read on the
church
Spotify
song?
But it's a song of the No, it sounds like it's a church song, right? It sounds like some Jesus ass shit, but it's a ambient song from this dude named Harold Budd, who was on a label that was run by Brian Eno, who, for those who know, is like a legendary ambient and like rock alternative music producer and musician himself. But I guess in the 70s, he had this label called Obscure Records, and this dude Harold Budd put out an ambient record on it, and it's so nice. I don't know, like if you ever like in the house, you just want some mellow, mm-hmm. clean, beautiful orchestral vibes. Mm-hmm. This is the song and the album for it. It's an album called The Pavilion of Dreams.
Okay.
And the song, the full title of the song is, it's two songs. It's one, the first song is Let Us Go Into the House of the Lord. And the second song is Butterfly Sunday. And it's like they're together as a one track. And it's beautiful. So guys, Yeah. So go listen to that. If you're in the house, you want you cleaner, you're just like chilling. You want like a nice little beautiful orchestral ambient beautiful thing playing in the background.
I do want that. Send me that
shout
link.
Out YouTube algorithm.
Yeah, drop me that link, Jordan.
Okay,
when you get that, drop me that link. I do like a little ambient background. Lately, me and Garrick have been listening to classical music just while we work from home. You know, just have it playing in the background, mm-hmm. something light. And a song that was playing reminded me of Bella's Lullaby from Twilight, which is a classical song, but not really. You know what I mean? It's from Twilight. So that's my song this week. Yeah, I just came up with that on the fly, too. If you have not heard...
No, but them film scores, I don't know if I've heard that before, but the film scores always got that nice, that those are a good go-to for yeah. like nice ambient... working music.
For sure. Throw that shit in the background. I'm concentrating like a motherfucker. I'm like, oh, maybe my mom should have listened to classical music while I was in the womb, because now I'm now I'm concentrated as hell. So, yeah, that's my song for the week. But yeah, now we can move to the main section, Jordan. Basketball. Something that I know very little about. I've learned who Wilt Chamberlain is. I've learned that LeBron James is number 34. Real quick, a story. I was at a bar.
What?
Oh, he's not number 34?
Okay.
What number is he?
We'll come back. He's not 34. He's number 6 now, but we'll go on. Go on.
Okay, well, then my story not going to make no damn sense. I was at a bar. In the toilet. I was at the toilet. And on the back of the toilet, it had a man, a black man, in a Lakers jersey. And they were wearing number... 34. And I was like, I think it was number 34. And I was like, why they got Shaq in the wrong number? And then I sent it to Garrick, and Garrick was like, that's LeBron. And I was like, oh, well, maybe it wasn't number 34. Maybe it was a different number. What number did he used to have?
He used to wear 23.
Okay. Yes, 23. Yes. I was like, why they got Michael Jordan in a Lakers jersey? That's what I was confused about. I was like, why they got Michael Jordan in a Lakers jersey in his bar? Like, what a weird cross reference. So I said that to Garrick. He was like, babe.
I'm dead.
He's like, that's listen.
Go.
I was like, oh, I forgot he played for LA.
Well, thank you for that beautiful prelude to this section of the show, because, you know, this is you know, we're all about historical accuracy and, you know, factual, you know, deep research stuff here. So, you know, I feel that's appropriate. Yes, basketball. You know, this was one of the first ideas I feel like we talked about when we were prepping this show. And it sounds odd because, you know, basketball is a thing that is, you know, historically, at least recently, associated so deeply with blackness and black culture, black music. And, you know, I think the countless songs I like to talk about, you know, like that brings that reference basketball players. That's become a whole trope in like, you know, popular rap is like, whatever, what did Kanye say in that new song? I'm with the Bucks boy, like Giannis, like, you know, this is, you know, this,
he comes to Queens like, nothing to me. What he said, you know,
yeah, no, but basketball, it feels like a very black thing, you know, so it's strange for us to be like this part of an episode about this. But the thing is, basketball was invented by a white Canadian man in like 1890, whatever. Basketball was invented by James Naismith, a man from Ontario, Canada. I think he lives and worked in Massachusetts, and he introduced the sport to these kids at a YMCA. And then before going on to I guess coach basketball at University of Kansas. There's a, you know, the picture of him with a peach basket and the leather ball that looks like a soccer ball. And that's the origins of basketball. It's not. It didn't start in Long Beach. It didn't start in Harlem. It didn't start, you know, it didn't start in Chicago. It started in like Massachusetts, Springfield, Massachusetts, with some guy in a peach basket. So how did it become so black is the thing I was curious about. And we're both kind of curious about. We, you know, so if it was appropriate to start with a little, some minor history stuff. So I learned that one of the first black pioneers of basketball is a guy named Edward Bancroft Anderson, who in the early 1900s had spent a summer. He was an educator and a proponent of like physical activity and stuff like that, you know, which was like a burgeoning like field in the early 1900s. It wasn't like, you know how we all have gym class and stuff like that. Like that wasn't always a thing.
Is that,
you know,
right?
Like, people like were,
they had kids just out here sitting.
Right. Like they're like kids just run around and they play and whatever. And that's what they do. But like, it's not like a thing we think is like, you know, necessarily healthy for like, right. Right. And this is the thing that people were like only just looking into, you know, as an organized thing in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So this dude, Edwin Henderson is his name, not Anderson, Edward Henderson. He was one of these like, you know, early educator, physical, activity, you know, sort of proponents. He did like some sort of summer program at Harvard in the early 1900s, where he was introduced to basketball because, you know, it started in Springfield, Massachusetts, not too far away. And so he brought it back to the Black YMCA in D.C., where he was like living and working. And he introduced to see some kids. And then soon it became this thing that like what became a very popular sport amongst like Black youth in D.C. And it spread to other cities, you know, as these things do. One of the first organized basketball teams ever was a club in Brooklyn, all black team in Brooklyn, New York. But of course, basketball, like all things around this the early 1900s in this time, like, was segregated. So, you know, there was like largely played at universities and like, you know, organized groups amongst white people. But there were obviously like black clubs that black, like, you know, played themselves and like, you know, formed their own groups. And so basically by the 20s, there were like a whole cluster of black groups, you know, notably among them Harlem Globetrotters, you know, which now is obviously a famous traveling entertainment thing. But they, you know, and around that time, they were, you know, a real basketball club that competed in real basketball games. And Will Chamberlain was notably a former Harlem Globetrotter. Also among them was a team called the Harlem Wrens or the New York Renaissance, but they're colloquially known as like the Harlem Wrens. And they were a team based in New York as well, who in their 25-year history from 1923 to 1948 apparently won 83% of their games, and they played white teams as well.
Of course it is.
And like they were just like hoping, like they were just like balling.
Absolutely.
You know, they couldn't be beat. And so like, you know, black people were like obviously very good at this game, you know, from very early on in its history. And there's all these histories about, you know, and music, you know, there were certain venues, of course, that black people couldn't play in around this, in this era. And so like they started their own joints, you know, juke joints and all this stuff. And the same thing happened with basketball. Apparently, like often you need space to have a basketball game, right? You need a whole place, space, right, to have a court and hoops and stuff like that. And so one of the places where they realized they could have enough space to do these was like the now popping up music joints that were like in ballrooms that were happening and that were popping up around the 20s and 30s and stuff like that. Cause you know, jazz and music was becoming live music and dancing were like all the craze. So they'd have these like events where they'd be like music and basketball, you know, like it'd be like dance and beforehand. And then they'd have like basketball players. They have a basketball game in the dance hall, like, you know, afterward or before. And so like basketball and music also, you know, been taught for a long time, but yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. Fast forward to 1950s and 60s, the NBA, the then and the still now, you know, biggest league of professional basketball teams integrates, and they let black players start playing. And by the 50s, a dude from San Francisco, from Oakland, named Bill Russell becomes a member of the Celtics.
I've heard of him.
And they go on to win however many zillion championships in the 50s and 60s. He at one point is both a player and a coach and the captain.
Stop it.
He becomes like, well, yeah, he's one of the first like black stars of the NBA.
What he look like?
And he like an old man now.
I'm positive of that.
And then, and like a little bit after him, he's joined by Wilt Chamberlain, who you, Sequoia, you know, obviously just is a super fan of.
Yeah.
And they become some of the two earliest, you know, black stars of the NBA. Wilt Chamberlain is most famously scored 100 points in a game.
Yeah.
which is a feat that still hasn't been topped.
Oh, that's crazy as shit.
And, you know, they became the first two big black stars in the NBA. And then obviously after that, a whole legion of kids wanted to play basketball. They see these two dudes, you know, making more money than most black people make and, you know, being on TV and like living flashy lives. And now, you know, we have the NBA that we have now, which is predominantly young black men with locks and or braids.
Yes. Niggas buffed out locks and braids nowadays. Jordan got braids right now.
Yeah, the braids are making a comeback and I'm with that.
You're here for that.
Yeah. Basketball has just become like, you know, a part of black culture in the way that like music is a part of black culture. Yep. You know, it's become this thing that's like, you know, so tightly woven to it. And so I don't know. I don't know if you had any ideas about like why you think that is, Sequoia. Like,
I don't know why that transition happened. I don't know, but I know that in rap music specifically, there's so many basketball references all of the time. Drake has that one bar that's like, ball and music are so synonymous because we want to be them and they want to be us. That seems to very much be the case. Hasn't there been? Didn't Kobe make a rap song? Am I tripping? Did Kobe make a rap song?
My name is Tom Buck, and this is The Enthusiasm Project. Join me each week for deep dives exploring the world of what it means to be an independent creator on YouTube, starting your own creative business, and keeping a positive, enthusiastic mindset along the way. New episodes of The Enthusiasm Project are available every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
No, Kobe had a whole rap, like a minor rap career. He's like a verse on a Brian McKnight song.
Oh my God, on a Brian McKnight song. And Shaq too, right?
Shaquille O'Neal had four like studio albums in the 90s with like Jay-Z verses and Biggie verses.
Stop it.
Yes, there's like a Shaq Biggie song on YouTube. Look it up.
That's
yes,
crazy as shit.
It's crazy.
No, that's crazy as shit.
Yeah. No, Shaq was fully like major label.
That I don't even understand. I literally don't even understand. But yeah, it's something to it. It's something to it. In the same way that black people are just musical, black people in basketball is just like a thing. Like, that's just the thing.
Part of it, I think, is that like, you know, like we said, this was one of the first venues in which black athletes were like making lots of money, you know, like, and you know what I mean? Like, you know, baseball, Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in baseball, I believe in the 40s or either the 40s or the 50s. And like and baseball for a long time was like the biggest sport in America, you know, it was like an American pastime. But basketball, you know, I think was the first sport where like you saw an influx of guys. And also it like there's like a style to basketball. Baseball's so, you know, straight running and straight
it
lines
is.
And hitting the ball.
There's
and
nothing
it's so
sexy about a baseball player. It's nothing sexy about baseball.
No, there's nothing sexy about baseball players. There's nothing rhythmic about the game. Well, there's stuff, but it doesn't have the flow no. of it, you know, way that I feel like it's very fitting that like basketball is happening in dance halls in the 20s and stuff like that, because like it's a very beautiful, sensual movement, rhythmic game, yep. You know? And I think that like, as we've like talked about a lot in different and various topics on this show, like those things are like synonymous with blackness across cultures, you know, like rhythm and movement and attention to beauty. There's a beauty to way basketball is played. Definitely. And I feel like black people, you know, we love to make shit beautiful that don't need to be beautiful.
100%,
you know, like
100%.
There's no reason some of those recipes slapped away, like those, like the leftover food that they were giving the slaves, like the way those recipes slapped the way they do.
Chitterlings, like I told y'all.
Oh my gosh. Like,
I keep trying to tell
the word that shall not be uttered aside. Yes, but you're right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's no reason like protective styles like braids should be
that
as hot as they,
a good
as they
point.
Are.
Didn't braids, like somebody told me that like cornrows were like a thing during the Middle Passage, the transatlantic
sure.
slave trade. Yeah. And like they were hiding rice in the cornrows. Like somebody told me that's how.
Word.
Like that's crazy. Yeah, and now the girls out here with yeah. braids every motherfucking summer looking like baddies, and what about mm-hmm.
Exactly. Half these things that we do and that have become like codified into black culture are often born of necessity or born of a certain other purpose, but like black people find a way to incorporate style and beauty into it because that's like a thing that we have a proclivity to do. And I think basketball is a sport that like is like a canvas that can be very expressive. You can be very expressive on. And the way that baseball you can and football you can't as much. Yeah.
That is such a good idea. That is such a good idea. You get to see their faces, or like that's such a good point. Like you can see everybody's faces on the basketball court. Do they all wear the same shoes, or do they sometimes get to wear their own shoes?
They all wear their different shoes now. Back in the day, they were kind of the same shoes.
Right. Yeah. Like now they all get to wear their own little swaggy shoe. They got their numbers and their names on the back of the shit. Like, it's just a very cool, I don't know how to put it, but it's just so into, like, you could tell each player, like you say a lot, you could tell each player just by how they're moving around the court. A lot of times when I'm watching a basketball game, I can't actually tell who that is, but I know the ones that I know when I see them, even though they're little small specks because of how they move about the court.
Exactly. And that paired with the fact that Wilt Chamberlain was probably the first nigga anybody saw driving a Rolls Royce and wearing furs and like him in class. You know, like that paired with those things, you're like, why wouldn't I want to be a basketball player? Right. You know, they're living a life. It's 1973. I'm living in Southside Chicago. I've never seen a car that wasn't a beater.
Right.
And so, I think it like that paired with like, you know, the obvious like rags to riches opportunity it offered. Like, you know, of course, like, you know, people were going to pour into it. And then, then of course we get Michael Jordan, who was like this, like, you know, generational pop culture figure, generational athlete. He like made basketball look on the court, look so cool and like seem so cool. And he had like the swag and his act, like the things we were talking about, like introduced like, you know, like this whole sneaker culture. I think it just was one of the things that kept building, you know, like the reason to like it continued to like present themselves. Yeah. Like now there's a whole industry, a whole like Instagram, social media world built around like athletes' style off the court, yeah. You know, like their pregame fits, yes. And shit like that. And it's like almost like there's continually opening up new ways for like black expression in this space.
For sure. Wait, who are your favorite like off-fit dressers or off-the-court dressers for the NBA?
This is a good question. I just recently became aware of this guy. He has a long name. I can't. It's something Alexander Walker on the New Orleans Pelicans. He's got. I just saw pictures of him the other day, and he has some incredible fits off the court. A lot of these younger players feel like they share at least one stylist with Drake.
Okay,
in that way,
yes, 100%.
You know, yep. Like where there's lots of like chrome hearts and like Air Force One collabs,
yes.
And
yes,
cool. Boot cut jean energy vintage t-shirt, you know.
Oh, this boy is so young. It looked like his name is Nickel, maybe. Nickel Alexander Walker.
Yeah, yeah.
Nickel. Yeah. Oh, he's Canadian. Oh, interesting.
More Drake connection. Uh-huh. Campbell Walker, the god. Campbell Walker from the Bronx, but he played at UConn, so he's a Connecticut legend. Okay. We will proclaim him. he also pulls a bit. Campbell Walker, I don't know where I have it saved, but there's a photo of him wearing this beautiful, like, fake silk or silk, like, Cuban shirt, like a short-sleeve button-down, yeah. You know, like that you wear, like, maybe to the beach, you know,
yes.
Sort of thing. But it's got printed on it a still from the movie Fallen Angels by Wong Kar-wai, who's this, like, Hong Kong director. And this movie Fallen Angels is from, like, the 90s. I don't know where he got this shirt or who made it, but it's, like, the hardest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And, like, you can't, like... I'll send you the image that he has on the shirt. I don't have the picture of him in the shirt, but I'll send you the image that he has on the shirt. It's so cool. So he's been known to do some things. But like a lot of these players, the Achilles heel of us young black men in general is the ultra tight, skinny ribbed distressed jean.
Oh my God.
I think that is a pandemic that we're not talking about nearly enough.
Oh my God.
I think it's plaguing black communities.
Gosh.
I think We need to get Jesse Jackson on this. We need to get Al Sharpton on this.
Quickly,
I think we need to get
Reverend, where are you?
Why is no one talking about this? Why has there not been a segment on CNN?
Katie Couric, where are you at? What y'all doing? What?
When are we going to address this? You know what I mean?
Please, somebody save my people. Blech. Those
ribbed distress, acid wash, elephant in the room. You know?
Oh my God! It really it's so bad.
You can't see my face, but I'm distressed. like these jeans.
Right.
Except for occasionally falling into that hole, Kemba's a great dresser. And I feel like the same could be said for a lot of these players. Like that is the Achilles heel of a lot of these players. Who else is a good dresser? Oh, Bol Bol is a. His dad was the name Manute Bol. He's like, where are they from? They're from South Sudan. And he's just like this tall. He must be like 7'8". This boy is so tall. But he's like one of those. I feel like he's affiliated with like Playboy Cardi, like ASAP Mob. I think he hangs out with the ultra canceled Ian Connor.
Got it. So he dresses.
But he's on a high fashion shit. Look, I was just sending you a photo of him. Bol Bol is like on that Rick Owens type shit. I feel like he's on some other shit.
Oh, okay. This is cute. Okay, we see a fit. Yeah, that's cute. He don't have them ultra tight fucking ribbed distressed pants on.
Yeah, he's letting his legs breathe, which is I feel like everybody can learn from that. Learn from Bol.
Oh, he's getting this fit off.
His draft suit is crazy.
His draft suit. Oh, this floral pants or whatever the fuck with this puffer jacket.
Uh huh.
And the icy wrists. Yeah, he's giving.
Low-key the hardest out.
Yeah. Bol Bol is his name? Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Okay, with the spider web. Okay, Spidey.
Yeah, with the off-white Air Forces on. He knows what he's doing. Bol Bol's like, I'd be on the mood boards. He's like, Bol Bol's like, gonna.
I am a mood.
Bol Bol, he's like, I got gonna saved in my phone as P emoji. Period. So don't play with me.
Obsessed. Love it. I love this. This is very cute.
Yeah, no, Bobo is very drippy. So
now, how do he find clothes to fit him? This man is tall as fuck.
Right, he's like I think literally 7'2".
That's wild. No, he's really long. Like I could just tell from looking at this photo, he looks oddly long. Those pants look like they're going for a really long time. And I don't. How did he even find clothes?
He must have the custom link or something. Because I don't know where he's
on call. Oh, these short shorts he got on are
big
short.
And tall is not doing awful.
Right, big and tall is not doing it. Yeah,
yeah. And those are probably large.
These are probably right. These are probably the longest shorts that they could give him, and these are at the middle of his thigh.
Right. Yeah. No,
he got on short shorts.
I don't know how where he found that puffer at, but they must have combined two puffers to make that one puffer.
I swear to God. They definitely sewed together two separate puffers to make this one puffer. Absolutely. Okay, so sometimes the NBA boys be dripping. They get off.
They get the fits off. And I feel like it's become this like new, like the new influencer zone is like basketball players. And be, you know, like I feel like there's been a lot of attention on basketball as this like space for high fashion or whatever.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't know. I think basketball just has a cool to it. I mean, I think it's the other factor. Basketball just has this like indescribable cool to it that I feel like a lot of sports don't have.
It definitely does. It definitely does. And you know what? Okay. Basketball has like this middle ground between baseball and football in that baseball is like kind of corny TBH. Like, you know, like it's just like very upright. Like there's no real risk to it. It doesn't seem, you know, like whatever. You hit this ball, you run a little short distance and that's
about
it.
About a swing.
Right. Like it's just like a little bit of corny. And then football, the brain damage, you know what I mean? Cause like football gives a little bit of concern and pause.
He's more concerned than anything.
Right, you know, like, it's just like a lot of concern there.
Yeah.
And like, although they look good, the football's always be looking good. You know, you're like, okay, these niggas, you know, they look like they could do something. They also might.
But why does he keep waking up in the middle of the night screaming?
You know what I mean? Like, you might not make it through though. And I don't want to be involved with that. But basketball players seem like they in that good middle ground. It's swaggy. They got a little bit of risk. You know, niggas be getting hurt. You know, we like that. We like a potential get hurt. That's cute. And it's not crazy to where I'm scared to wake up next to you. So it's good.
It's beautiful. Oh, and I was going to say, like, we can't leave this podcast without talking about basketball, without talking about basketball and black people specifically, without talking about Allen Iverson.
Oh, duh. Oh, my God. We was about to try to get off here without talking about fucking Allen Iverson.
A game changer.
Wow.
And game changer. And so, Sequoia, like, to provide the NBA historical context for this man. In the 90s, the classic story is in the 90s, Michael Jordan was like the mayor. He was like the big man in town, right? Everybody wanted to be like Michael. Everybody did what Michael did. He was like the guy.
Right.
And so Michael's whole game was like off the court, Armani suits, the billowy, beautiful Armani suits, the Ferrari, you know what I'm saying? Like very like classy, a businessman. Like it was his energy. And then Allen Iverson comes around, and Allen Iverson, of course, is like, you know, generation below Michael Jordan. He arrived in the mid-90s. Michael Jordan arrived in the mid-80s. Allen Iverson is like a young kid from Virginia Beach, like, you know, from the hood. Like, he had braids in the NBA before anybody was really wearing braids.
Yep, straight backs.
And, like, had a bunch of visible tattoos, which before, believe it or not, before Allen Iverson was not very common.
Really?
In the NBA, having a bunch of visible tattoos. Okay. Yes. And, like, this is how much he changed the visual paradigm.
Fuck
of the
yeah.
game. And he would wear, like, headbands, a bunch of unnecessary, like, accoutrement on his body. You know, like, he wore the shooting sleeve. People weren't wearing shooting sleeves before.
Wow. Allen Iverson. Wow, Allen Iverson changed the fucking game.
Turned the whole aesthetic, like, look of the game. And so, and the way he played, to put, like, the cherry on top, was just, like, more street than most people, like, you know, it's way more, like, you know, the dancing
yeah.
than it was, you know,
yeah,
like,
it was
than conventional basketball.
Yeah.
Right, like, Michael Jordan was, like, you know, the, like, kind of, like, rigid, like, not rigid, but, like, exacting, beautiful ballet
right.
artist.
Right,
and the way he played. Allen Iverson was, like
a
the kid you see on TikTok now, like, right, like, he was like a crupper. He was like just smooth with it, you know what I'm saying? Like, sturdy, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
he had a whole different swag to him, and that was, like, that just, like, was eye-opening for the game. And, like, they actively pushed against it when he first got there. Like, if you watch, like, listen to, like, on YouTube, there'll be old broadcasts, and they'll be like, what's that on his head? You know, what is his hair? What is he doing? Iverson checking in with his tattoos, that nigga.
Yo,
you
know, like, I'm dying.
That is the whole timbre of how they talk about him for like 5 years until he becomes like the norm.
That nigga, yeah.
Right, like, and they put in a dress code in part in response to Allen Iverson off the court, where, like, players before were permitted to do what they wanted to do, but, like, most players would just wear a suit because that was just, like, what they did. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what Michael Jordan did. That's what a lot of the people did. So they just wear suits.
Yeah.
But then Allen Iverson would show up to games and, like, whatever the fuck he wanted, like a sweatsuit, mm-hmm. you know, like, whatever the fuck he wanted to wear in 1998, 2000. And they were like, you know what? That is too niggardly.
Right.
You must wear a suit.
Right.
So they put in a rule in part in response to Allen Iverson and the wave he started for players to wear certain clothes on the sidelines. If they were not playing that night and they were going to be sitting on the bench, they had to be wearing a suit.
That's so weird.
And that lasted until very recently.
That's very weird.
Yeah. And yeah, so they were trying to police him, and like his impact on, like, I mean, I'm born in 1995, but by the time when I was, like, in my youth years as a young recreational basketball player, shout out Hampton Fathers Rec League 2005-2006
All-Star. Okay, I was about to ask
you. 9 and 10 boys.
I was about to ask right. you, did you play?
Yeah, come
okay.
on. All right. No, don't play with me. Anyway, but in 01 to 06, you know, when I'm playing basketball as a little kid, he was, like, the one everybody wanted to look like. My friend BJ, like, had all his shoes. Like, you know, we wore, like, the little t-shirts, you know, like, the headbands and shooting sleeves.
Yes.
We all wanted to be, like,
I remember that era of little boys being trying to be, like, AI. I didn't know who that was at the time, but, like, I absolutely remember that era.
And also that sort of disposition of, like, being like, I'm going to do whatever I want because I can do whatever I want because it's cool, and I know I'm cool. That is, like, the whole NBA energy now. He made that okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, are you not going to tell me what to do? Like, his one of his most famous moments is, like, he didn't show up to a practice or a game. And then, like, the reporters are, like, always trying to, like, build a narrative around him being unruly and disorderly and, like, you know, not being a team player. And he's like, I forget, there was important context around why he went out. I think a friend had passed or something had happened
yeah,
in his life.
Yeah.
And he was like, y'all are telling me, are you trying to call me unprofessional, tell me I'm doing whatever because I missed a practice.
I don't give a fuck about that.
You know, like, you know, I show every game every night and score 30 points
period.
And carry this team on my back. Yeah, and you're telling me I can't miss a practice.
Don't talk to me about practice. You niggas need to practice. Isn't he short?
Right, no, he's an icon. And yeah, and he was small for relatively, he's like probably 6 feet tall.
6 feet,
which is
still short for the NBA.
Yeah.
You're like somebody in fucking 6 feet. Steph Curry is short for the NBA. Isn't he like 6'3"?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he was like notoriously pretty small for the NBA, but like still one of the greatest players of his generation. And so like that was inspiring too. That was like all these little kids were like, I could be like AI. He's not that big.
Right.
And like he's still dominating. Yeah, so he's a game changer, and we couldn't do this podcast without mentioning him.
I can't believe he's going to try to get off here without mentioning Allen Iverson.
I know, that was crazy of us. I'm so sorry.
Right, that's you, Jordan. I was going to say, you did play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, me as well.
Continue to.
Hmm?
Oh, okay, talk to him. All right.
Yeah, I played a little bit of basketball.
What are we talking about? Long Beach Rec League?
I played for my middle school.
You can't see her, she's adjusting her hair. okay.
I played for my middle school, you know. I was, I don't know basketball positions, but I know that I played one of the wings, okay? And
A little shooting guard, a little 2-3.
You know, action. I was a little 2-3 action, doing a little something, something. And I hyperextended my leg. I hyperextended my knee
no.
before the season started.
Oh, no.
And was on crutches for the next 6 months. And thus, I didn't get to play that year. But the following year, I tried out again, and I made it again. And I scored a basket in the other team's basket. And they gave it to the other team. Okay. And that shit was mad fucking embarrassing.
Oh, no, Sequoia. Sequoia, no.
That shit was, because once I did it, like, you know, we had just switched for halftime or whatever, so I was still confused. I thought that we were still on that other basket. And so I ran down there. Nobody, I thought I had gotten a fast break on these niggas. Nobody was after me, whatever. I was like,
No. I'm dead.
Shot in that bitch, like, probably one of the only times I scored anything during the season, of course, because it was very uncontested. And they gave that shit to the other team. And I was like, wow, you niggas are a piece of work. You knew that was a fucking accident and you gonna give it to the other team. How dare you?
You niggas are a piece of work.
You niggas are a piece of work.
The gall of you to enforce the rules.
Like, how dare you? Now you're trying to embarrass me. Add insult to injury. I already did the shit. Now you want to give it to them. How dare you? So needless to say, I got pulled out and really didn't get picked back in for the rest of the season. Yeah, but I played, I can do. I can spin the ball on my finger to this day because I spent a lot of time on the bench learning crazy. That shit. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boom. I can imagine you, boxing like girls out and like fighting for the ball. I feel like whenever I watch the middle school game, they're all fighting for the ball.
Yeah, yeah, snatch that shit.
It was like boxing class for those little girls. It was like.
That's how you get that aggression out. That's definitely it.
Well, podcast, I have to pee, so you guys can sit tight.
I'm done. No, we're done. No, we're done. This is the end of the podcast. Jordan, you go pee. I'll do the outro. Anyways, y'all, this nigga really went to go use the bathroom. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Black People Love Paramore. If you liked it, feel free to rate us 5 stars, of course. You can reach us on social media at BPLPpod across all platforms. And then if you want to email us questions, if you have ideas for a topic that you think that we should cover, you can email us at blackpeopleloveparamore@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the next episode. Bye, y'all.